Hello and welcome to Season 2 of the Virtually Teachers podcast, the podcast where teachers from different contexts have been inspired by these strange times to come together in a roundtable format and discuss big educational questions. I'm taking a turn in the host seat today. I'm Rachel Lewin, history lead and deputy head teacher of a beautiful little through school on an island in the southwest.
Hello, my name is Mike Hill and I'm a head of history at a school in West London.
Hello, my name is Jacob Keat and I'm a history teacher at a private boarding school down in West Sussex.
Hello, my name is David Hibbert and I am a head of humanities at a school in Oxford.
This August, the Association of School and College Leaders published their 2024 Election Manifesto, a roadmap to guide all political parties as they aim to form a new government. In Jeff Barton's introduction, he states that the next government will come to power at one of the most difficult moments in recent history. It will need to deal with multiple interconnected challenges and plot a course towards a more positive future. The report demands that the government listens to the educational research community and the voices of leaders, teachers, support staff, pupils, and families. Today, we'll be talking about what we would like to say to the incoming policymakers of 2024. Briefly first, let's look at the biggest challenges that we see facing schools right now or looming on the horizon. ASCL's membership identified three key areas of concern or potential crisis. Firstly, recruitment and retention, considering pay, workload, and unrepresentation of specific groups in teaching. Secondly, a shockingly widening disadvantage gap. And thirdly, the ever-expanding expectations on schools and colleges. Perhaps it underpins all of these, but I would add my concern about the challenges of curriculum development, of control or autonomy, of legislating for or allowing teachers to create curricula that are both academically rigorous and relevant for children and young adults in a world where climate crisis, inequality, racism, anti-woke discourse, those things are a scary reality. But I'd like to ask my virtually colleagues, friends here, are there particular challenges within these areas or beyond them that you see casting a shadow across the educational paths that stretch ahead?
I've got a thought there, which is, I've been thinking, without wanting to sound too doomy, I've been thinking maybe about the challenges facing the world. And there's one phrase which I think was coined by Adam Tooze, or the release is being used a lot by Adam Tooze, and the word polycrisis. He talks about how there's lots of intersecting crises, climate change, political extremism, poverty, food and water shortages. And he talks about how the different elements of the crisis interact. And that's part of what makes it so difficult. And I guess that's one of my overriding concerns, is that all of these things that you're talking about interact in really potentially difficult and challenging ways. And just to give one example, I think recruitment and retention really poses an existential threat to everything that we're talking about here. If you want to tackle attendance or disadvantage gaps, teach a great curriculum, you absolutely need good teachers, ideally subject specialist teachers, in front of students regularly. And suddenly without that, you can end up with very quickly with negative feedback loops. So more cover, less consistency, less challenges around relationships with students, more pressure on staff. And so the sort of snowball can roll down the hill, particularly in schools where it's more challenging and you have greater challenges in recruiting. And that's really my overarching concern, is how all of these challenges together could quite quickly create negative feedback loops. And then that could really result in a lot of schools and staff facing a lot more pressure very, very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been so much talk in the news, and of course with the teaching unions about pay and salaries. But I think it goes beyond that too, doesn't it? It goes beyond the money which teachers receive. I don't think anyone goes into teaching to be hugely financially rewarded, like they would go into finance or whatever. But it's also about workload. It's about the type of work which is given to teachers, and it's quite evident that there's dissatisfaction with that. I think there's over the last couple of years, the data shows that the number of teacher vacancies has gone up by over 1,000. The number of temporary filled posts has also gone up by roughly the same amount. And what David said there about creating stability in a school, but even in a classroom, and even on a one-to-one level with trust for students, having a person there who's going to be in that classroom day in, day out is so, so important in just helping individual children to feel safe, secure, and then to begin to foster a good learning environment.
I completely agree with what both of you said. Just to add maybe like two more things. If I were to characterize like big challenges, as Rachel said, I think one challenge is that fixing loads of the problems we have in education is going to cost a hell of a lot of money. But at the same time, money isn't going to solve all of our problems. So I think pretty much everyone who works in schools, in state schools in particular, agrees that we need more cash to be pumped into schools, into the system to fix many problems. But it doesn't currently seem like that's going to be forthcoming, looking at the policy discourse, either from the government or from the opposition. And however, secondly, I think even if there is money, even if we could get the funding right, there are still huge problems in schools or challenges around kind of ideas and about the impact of potentially damaging ideas as well. So something that concerns me is that many of the achievements, actually much of the progress we've seen over the last decades or so in teaching, about focusing teachers and schools back onto the curriculum, onto what children are learning, also around battling edu myths that are very, very persistent. A lot of that, I think, now seems to be built on sand. A lot of that seems much, much more up for grabs than perhaps we might have thought. So that is something that worries me as well.
I think those are really fascinating challenges that you've all raised there. And I definitely want to hear more about that, particularly, Mike, it'd be really interesting to know more about what you're thinking about the specific edu myths that we're worrying about and what we can do to build, not on sand maybe, but on stone as we go forward. So if we do now look forward, look ahead at the changes we would want to see in order to really try and light up schools and children's future educational journeys, what would we hope to read in political manifestos for 2024? From my point of view, of ASCL's recommendations for future policy commitments, there are a few that particularly spoke to me. I think Ofsted reform is surely a thorn that's worth grasping by any party. They recommend the replacement of graded judgments with a narrative approach and performance tables with an accountability dashboard. And those are key commitments that I think everybody will be discussing. ASCL also focus hugely on the black hole of SEND funding, which comes to that question that you've raised there, Mike, about the need for much more cash. And SEND is, it's a huge problem, isn't it? The current situation's compounding disadvantage for SEND children, and also at the same time swallowing up desperately needed resources from lots of different areas of school provision. From my point of view, though, I think the recommendation that ASCL put forward to create a new independent body tasked with reshaping curriculum and assessment is really fascinating. And I'd really recommend listeners reading the suggestions in this section of the manifesto. They include a commitment to inclusive representative curriculum design, which indicates to me a firm stance against any sort of anti-woke agenda. I wonder how that will go down and whether that will align with the standpoint of the new nominee for Ofsted chief, Sir Martin Oliver, who was a contributor to the Sewell report. But I'd also suggest that the subtext of the programme that's outlined by ASCL is a long-term view that the current assessment systems at GCSE and A-level need rethinking, very much sort of in line with the recommendations of Blunkett's Learning and Skills report back in October 2022. ASCL reference having a new national curriculum that goes up to 16, a new literacy and numeracy passport qualification that rescues children who are doomed to that awful cycle of English and maths GCSE resits. They recommend accountability measures that now value the arts and technology, as well as a commitment to applied qualifications such as BTECs. And those are all things that I'd really love to see entering into future policy, along with a greater focus on the environment and on climate education. Those are the things I think that David was talking about there when he talks about those sort of big worldwide policy crises. I worry, David, that the snowball won't just roll down the hill, as he said, but might melt away completely. So I wonder if any of those ideas put forward by Askell appeal to my virtually teachers' friends, or if you'd like to expand on the challenges that you've already presented. Who wants to go first?
I can go first if you like. Regarding changes to the curriculum in a vocational sense, I think with the current government, there's been some discourse in terms of shaking up the system of GCSE and A level, not so much as replacing things, but in adding the T level, for example, which has been introduced recently, and that has had some criticism because it's the vocational T levels. We don't know what they are. They're a vocational qualification, which is meant to be the government's gold standard, quote unquote, in helping students to achieve some kind of vocational ideal before they leave school. But they've come under criticism by Ofsted, principally with the fact that they often don't fulfil the function that they're supposed to. They're meant to be a 2-year course. Ofsted found that many students that complete that enter them in the first year then don't go into the second year, so they don't have value for students because they don't end up giving many of them many students which take them a qualification in the first place. And what this just rings out to me is that we lack a kind of long-term plan for a school-wide project in the last 10 years, and perhaps the T level is a good example of that. It seems to have tried to be stuck on as a short-term fix. The same could be said for Rishi Sunak's peculiar idea to extend the study of maths to 18. And I think this relates to what Mike was saying with the edumis, that if one thing is the bugbear, and if that's sorted, then everything will fall into place. This presents a problem because it means that governments end up being quite short-sighted in their views on education. And if any reform is to take place, particularly regarding the examination system, which, following on from what Rachel said, is hugely problematic, particularly from COVID. We've seen students have to undergo different varieties of assessment, which has produced a hugely different variety of results, and at the current cycle of exams, there's students are struggling with more difficult questions, they've said, with the problem of grade deflation, etc. So if there's going to be any reform, it needs to be much more far-sighted in what it's trying to do, whether that be on a vocational level like the T levels or in shaking up the whole system, as Rachel has said earlier.
Completely, Jacob. I absolutely agree with you. I think one of the hugest frustrations that anybody working in education has is the whole thing of constant change of, new qualifications, new ideas coming in and then just being dumped unceremoniously so quickly. I'm really fascinated to hear what you say about the T levels. I didn't know that about the high dropout rate. But they've only just come in. Surely it takes a few years to embed them. I've certainly got students who've gone on from our school to do T levels at our local sixth form college, who are loving them and finding them really fulfilling, really challenging. And it's frustrating to think that change, and particularly changes to those all important kind of vocational qualifications, should be recommended so quickly. I think when it comes to GCSEs, from my point of view, they have had a good long cycle as they are. And I think maybe in that case, I think it's important not just to hold on to the security of a gold standard qualification that we all know and think is safe, but to really consider a long-term change. But whatever it is, it's got to be really well thought out. And then it's got to be with a commitment to sticking with it and making it work over a good number of years anyway.
Just on the point of kind of the problems around change, the necessity of change and so on, my answer to your initial question, Rachel, of what we would like to see in the manifesto would very much be, and perhaps this is kind of controversial, but let's discuss it. I would really like to see government focus 100% on the bread and butter issues in education and kind of leave the curriculum alone. So for me, from my perspective, I really think we need government to focus on recruitment and retention, which David mentioned earlier, is such a massive and, as he said, existential crisis, and it needs to be front and center. We need loads of focus, I think, on funding for building work and so on, for maintenance, but also for support services around schools. And we need better funding for sixth forms in particular. And essentially, I think we need to build more slack back into the system. I think that was one of the big developments over the last decade or so, was this idea of trying to cut public services back down to sort of complete efficiency levels, so to speak. And I'm not against efficiency, but the problem is with public services, such as schools, is they deal with people, and people are unpredictable, and people have crises. And then within schools, when those crises appear, someone has to deal with them. You can't postpone them. And it just means that someone who already is at capacity then has to deal with something else. And it just means at the end of the day, someone cries in their office and thinks about quitting their job. So recruitment, retention, funding, and then I think we also need government to really focus on things that might not at first appear or to look like educational issues, but that really affect schools. So I think we need government to focus on reducing child poverty. And I also think this is something that really confuses me, surprises me. It's not much a much bigger part of the policy discourse. I think we really need government to look at child phone use and child use of social media and vaping. All of those to me seem like spiraling crises that are just a ticking time bomb waiting to explode, and no one's really talking about it. Phone use, social media use, vaping, those are creating so much workload within schools, because then pastoral leaders, school leaders have to deal with those issues, which means, again, ties in with the idea that we're already at capacity. So those are the things I really want government to focus on. The curriculum, I think, I would like to see the national curriculum to stay for now. I think teachers have done and schools have done loads of really good work on that over the last decade. And if we had more consistency there, it would mean teachers could actually then build on that work and iron out some of the problems that there are. But overall, I really want government to focus on those bread and butter issues of recruitment, retention, funding, child poverty, behavior and attendance, social media, child phone use, and so on, not on the curriculum.
I think you're absolutely right, Mike. Of course, those huge issues that go way beyond schools are the things that absolutely need fixing. I think that any education department, however, will find it very hard to resist tinkering with the curriculum, and that we need to present a really kind of clear message from teachers and leaders about what really needs to stay and what we need to be able to build on in terms of the work that we've done over the last few years, in particular around curriculum. I think that's a really good point. Thank you. What would you say to all of that, David?
Yeah, I think I'd echo a lot of what's already been said. And going back to your point, Mike, about funding, I mean, you mentioned earlier as well the political realities, and I'm not naive to the issues of government debt and the cost of living crisis and the fact that it's going to be politically and economically difficult to pump a whole load of new money into schools, perhaps. But at the same time, if you're going to address the problems of that scale, you're going to need to put resource in there. And I'd argue that committing those resources early in a new parliament perhaps might help address problems in a way that would mean less resource intensive issues emerging later on. And I think that needs to be said. I'd also, on the point of addressing the nuts and bolts issues and going back to accountability and the ASCOR manifesto, Rachel, I think Ofsted reform has to be central. If we're in a world where teachers are having increasing amounts of pressure put on them and we're literally running out of teachers, there are not enough teachers left, then one quite easy way of making teachers' lives easier and releasing the pressure a little bit on schools is to rethink that accountability system. And I'd really welcome the commitment in the Labour's missions documents to replace the Ofsted single word judgments with report cards. I think that's a really sensible, low resource but an intelligently thought through measure. My third thing is slightly different. It goes back a little bit to what you were saying, Mike. And I worry a little bit about the emphasis both on technology and skills. And I think it seems particularly under the influence of maybe the Tony Blair Institute, there seems to be this emphasis on technology generally in public services that seems to extend to schools. And I just think there needs to that needs to be approached with real care. Technology is not necessarily a panacea for the problems that we're discussing. And I think if not handled carefully and introduced carefully and resourced carefully, could actually make some of them worse. I know we've talked about technology before on the podcast, but I think going back to Daisy Christodoulou's teachers versus tech and that kind of central argument of pedagogy first and curricular issue first, technology then serving those ends rather than technology first as the solution then being grafted retrospectively onto schools, subjects and into classrooms, I think really matters. Otherwise, I feel like we could end up going down a blind alley of 21st century skills, devices, technology being a solution without the problem really being fully understood first. And I just think that that needs really careful thought. So those are my three kind of reflections on what's been said so far.
If I could just jump in there, David, I would completely agree and echo with those concerns. And something that is perhaps a wider concern for me, or something actually, let's phrase it positively, something I would like to see in manifestos is whoever is going to form the next government talking to teachers and leaders who have worked in like successful high-performing schools. Let their advice inform policy and not people who either have got no track records or kind of just lofty ideas. David mentioned the Tony Blair Institute there, or who don't have any skin in the game. Because if I look at recently, whenever those Tony Blair Institute reports came out, I kind of had a bit of a look at who worked on those. And those people were, as far as I can see, had no experience of working in schools. And particularly not of working in successful schools. And that, to me, seems to be a bit of a theme. I don't think it currently looks like loads of people are talking to people who run schools where behaviour is really excellent, where pupils attain really highly, make really strong progress. So that is something I would like to see from the next government, engage with teachers and school leaders who've worked in really high-performing, successful schools.
Yeah, I absolutely agree there. I think that's critical. And you talked about that point about system learning. And I feel like that's something that, from what I understand, Keir Starmer is really passionate about. He really is passionate about long-term thinking, improving systems, learning from what's already good and improving in that way. And I feel like there's an awful lot that has been really impressive and has worked really well about the curriculum emphasis and a lot of the work that teachers have done there. And I think thinking really carefully, intelligently and critically, as you say, talking to the people who have walked the walk, who have that kind of that level of system knowledge matters hugely if it's going to be effective.
David, sorry, it's interesting to hear you say Keir Starmer being passionate about something. I think the only thing he's passionate about is avoiding a bad headline in the Daily Mail ahead of the election. Well, I think this is precisely the problem. I agree with you both in the sense that curriculum doesn't necessarily need the radical overhauls that, for example, Gove was trying to bring in with, I remember when we were training as history teachers and Michael Gove had that curriculum for history that started off with Stonehenge when you were in year one, and then you got to the Glorious Revolution when you got to year six and carried on from there telling the British national story. Perhaps we don't need that kind of detailed national projection from someone who's not even been in the education sector telling us what to do. But I think there certainly does need to be more radical thinking from the next government, presumably, which would hopefully be a Labour one, about the nature of what schooling is in this country. And I just want to talk for a bit on private schools, because obviously I've worked in one for the last 7 years, and with some experience in the state sector too. It's so strange in this country that British private schools are held up as the pinnacle of sometimes the world's educational model, and certainly so much of our government and leadership, so many people from there come from British private schools. But in some ways, they're so very different to the model which we put out on the state system that I think it sometimes beggars belief as to what we're trying to get at. I think if you look at the private school I work in, there's a number of teachers who've not been through formal teacher education. Perhaps that's something that needs to be addressed. But if we're holding that up as a standard of what education is about, should we, in order to deal with the teacher retention crisis, in order to encourage more people into teaching, should we think about new, quicker routes into the teaching profession that then attract more people? I don't know. That's a question to throw out there. Obviously, with the private system, the issue of funding is far different, in that private schools are generally have many more funds at their disposal. But then look at their model for teaching as well. I mean, I work in a boarding school. We have the students here 24/7. But what that tends to encourage there is far more focus on extracurricular learning, for example, outdoor education. Does that need to be addressed in a wider curriculum model for the government to think about going into the future? Do we need to think about student interactions with each other more frequently, students here of course live at school, but of course most of the learning for students across the country I think goes on in the home environment. And how can we as teachers think about how our curricula, how our education system fits in with the social context in which the students are growing up? The other big thing with the private sector is I think that the pressure is off for the classroom teacher in a big way. I think I've worked in a school that was struggling desperately under Ofsted. It was getting requires improvement all the time, frequent Ofsted inspections. Our head was sacked, we had a head that absolutely loved the school and loved the town that we were in. The town we were in was I suppose quite poor, and lots of students came from perhaps more challenging backgrounds. But the point was the Ofsted system of education, of inspection, actually helping that school to grow and develop to fit the context that school was in, to get the however many A star to C's in English and maths that Ofsted required at that point? I don't think it was. And in the private sector, when we have an inspection, it is thorough, but it doesn't tend to focus on those. It doesn't tend to have the same damning indictment that sometimes Ofsted gives to struggling state schools that are dealing with a whole host of wider social problems beyond the results-based thing that Ofsted traditionally looks for. And of course, we've had the case recently where I think it was that primary school teacher very sadly took her own life because of the stresses that she was put under by the Ofsted system. So I think, in order to summarise that point, perhaps learning from the things which British education supposedly does well, and then translating those into the future of what we want our education system to look like. And the final thing we need to look at, of course, is the huge disparity in attainment between those that go to private schools and those that go to state. Keir Starmer has mentioned already removing the charitable status of private schools in this country. But even working in a private school myself, I think it needs to go further. You can't physically have a system in a country where the structure of education is so two-tiered as it is here. And the British education system is one of the most divided, I think, in the whole world in terms of how private schools operate versus how state schools do. So I think that the private school system and the monopoly, really, which it's had on sending its children off to Oxford and Cambridge and then to positions of power in government, certainly needs to be shaken up in the future. And Keir Starmer needs to certainly be more radical in how that's going to be approached.
If I could just jump in there and pick up on one of your points, Jacob, we've talked a bit about sort of Ofsted reform as something that's come up again and again in the podcast today. And personally, I'm in favour of Ofsted reform. I think it needs to change. I probably think it should be pass or fail based on safeguarding and behaviour, not because I don't think anything else isn't important, but because I think it's really hard to assess or inspect in a kind of rigorous and consistent way. However, I think there is a big question around how much accountability do we need in a system, in an education system, or what kind of accountability do we need? Because, for example, I think it's very good that lots of schools now think a lot more about curriculum and what children are actually learning than they perhaps did 15 years ago. And I think the reality is that happened because of Ofsted, right? That wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the big levers, the big accountability levers. So even though I think we need to reform Ofsted, and I think we probably need less accountability in the system, or a different form of accountability in the system than we currently have, I still think there are big questions around how much accountability do we need, though, and what is the role of that in a publicly funded system?
Yeah, I totally agree there. I mean, a world without Ofsted in some ways I find almost as scary as the current one. So like finding the right balance there, and particularly how the inspectorate can support and help address the issues that we're talking about is a really tricky balance. And the last thing I want to say, kind of building off both what you said and what Jacob said, is that point about extracurricular and also the emphasis, again, really pleased to see that in one of Labour's missions about the emphasis on the arts, and thinking about the curriculum offer in that way as well. And going back to what you said earlier, Mike, about phones and about the kind of social realities of young people, the idea of kind of connections and of you. And that's one thing, Jacob, that I think the state sector, partly because of the lack of resource that it has a lot of the time, can learn from the private sector, is that extracurricular offer and the power of that when done well, and how that can work in terms of behaviour, attendance, connecting with the curriculum meaningfully. I think there's some very powerful work that could be done there, definitely.
Absolutely. I think in this really short discussion, you know, we've seen, haven't we, how incredibly difficult it is to shape education policy, because throughout what you've been saying, we've been kind of zooming out to huge global issues and then back into curriculum and classroom practice. And those things are so utterly intertwined, it's really hard to figure out what to tackle first. I would say probably that we would all agree with, well, what Mike said and what you've all referenced in terms of the crucial need to think bigger, to look beyond schools at those huge global issues, at issues of child poverty, of the divided system that Jacob was talking about, of concerns about social media, about child phone use, about, you know, what's happening at home and in the wider community. So that's got to underpin anything that education policymakers are thinking about. We're all clearly also agreed on the need to reform Ofsted. I think you're right, Mike, that there is a need for accountability. You know, we absolutely can't have a system where some people may be in schools that are completely unregulated and potentially dangerous. So it is important, as well as because you do then get that real sort of discourse around big conversations around curriculum. But it is, it's where we get to curriculum, I think things get really sticky. I think we'd agree again that we need to build firmly on the work that we've done, on what's there, that any changes that are considered, they need to be well thought out and they need to be long-term thinking, whatever's brought in, and that a real advice from the voices of teachers is, please don't get distracted by those kind of new shiny things, those short-term changes that will just take away from all the work that teachers are doing. So that's the tricky thing, I think, is where governments need to be radical and where they need to just build on kind of current success. But overall, I think we'd all say, please do that systems learning, do that listening, talk to teachers, think about what they're saying, as well as to children and their families. Maybe we should just all get elected and make all this happen. But meanwhile, we'll just finish as usual with something that we've been doing, reading or watching that we would recommend to our listeners. Mike, do you want to start us off?
Yes, thank you, Rachel. At time of recording, I think I'm the only person in the world who has seen neither Barbie nor Oppenheimer. I was, however, on holiday in Croatia the other day, and there was a lovely, really nice outdoor cinema, and I went and saw Meg 2, The Trench there with Jason Statham, which currently has a solid 28% on Rotten Tomatoes, is 2 hours of people fighting prehistoric mega sharks, and it's very good fun. So I recommend watching Meg 2 with Statham.
Great. Jacob, what about you?
Meg 2 with Statham. We watched the Mission Impossible the other day, but it went on for such a long time, I think, and it walked out about halfway through. In any case, I've just got a really good book on the interview of the debriefing of Saddam Hussein, written by the CIA guy that interviewed him after his capture, James Nixon, I think it is, which is really good at the moment, about quarter of the way through, but recommended read.
Sounds great for the beach. Thank you, Jacob. And David?
So yeah, you mentioned Barbie, Mike. I'm going to make a Barbie related suggestion. So I did see Barbie and Oppenheimer in one day. Hashtag Barbenheimer. But my general recommendation is Ryan Gosling, because Ryan Gosling is fantastic as Ken in Barbie. And I just sort of realized after watching Barbie how many of my favorite films of recent years have starred Ryan Gosling. So I think Blade Runner 2049, First Man, La La Land. Now Barbie, the man is just fantastic. So Ryan Gosling, that's my recommendation.
Mike wants to say something about that.
Yes, just because I thought David was going to say something else there, because I know David is a big fan of Michael Wood. And did you see that Michael Wood reviewed Barbie in the LRB? I thought that would be up your street.
I did not, and I'm literally, as soon as this recording is done, I'm going to go and look that up. Thank you very much.
I have to say, I ended up with a poster of Ryan Gosling in my classroom last term. Because during Neurodivergence Week, there were lots of posters around school of people with ADHD or Asperger's, etc. And Ryan Gosling has ADHD, and I had, therefore, a poster brought in and put up on my board, which was very charming for me. My recommendation, I've mentioned climate education a couple of times today, so I've got a couple of recommendations if you're interested in thinking further about that too. Firstly, there was a really good Reasons to be Cheerful podcast on the fight for better climate education in our schools recently, recommended to me by my friend and virtually teachers listener, Jane, which I really enjoyed. It gave me new perspective on the planned new natural history GCSE in particular. And secondly, it's not really a recommendation, it's one to watch out for. But there's a new publication coming out from the UCL Knowledge and Curriculum series, which will have a free access PDF version on history and the climate crisis, looking at how we teach environmental history in the classroom. So that's something I'm really looking forward to reading. Yes, Mike?
I have to make one more addition. I just Googled it and I realised it's the wrong Michael Wood, David. I'm really sorry.
Oh, I'm now heartbroken. It's a tragedy.
Maybe there are two amazing Michael Woods in the world.
Clearly.
Well, that's it for us for now. Thank you very much for listening. We are hoping very much that you will head on over to Twitter to join our discussion. We'd like to know what you would like to say to the incoming education policymakers of 2024. Thank you.